You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, bodacious Booze Baldwins and Bettys. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 117, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your sonic-speeding, clueless-catching, Hanson-humming 90s nuts.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
It's like I'm right back 90s. In the 90s.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. Here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card. You guys have your morning zoo radio buzzers. Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. Name five of the eight U.S. states that start with the letter M. And go around the table. Colin, you can start.
Minnesota.
Ding, 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 ding.
Maine.
Ding, 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 ding.
Missouri.
Ding, 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 ding.
Michigan.
Ding, 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 ding.
Massachusetts.
Ding, 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 ding.
New Mexico.
No.
What do we have so far? We had Minnesota, Michigan, Maine, Missouri, Massachusetts.
Montana.
Montana. And Maryland.
And Maryland. Good. Everybody always forgets Maryland.
Actually, you guys also forgot to say Mississippi.
All right. Pink Wedge for pop culture. What instrument does billionaire philanthropist Warren Buffett play? Multiple choice.
Oh, good.
Clarinet. Trombone or the ukulele? Mm-hmm. Oh, Colin.
I believe it's the clarinet.
Incorrect.
Mm.
Boing. Chris.
Ukulele.
It is the ukulele.
Everybody yes. plays the ukulele.
He's such a hipster.
That Warren Buffett.
Okay, yeah. Zooey Deschanel Buffett.
When you have that much money, you can get away with it.
With his pork That's pie true. Hat.
Yeah.
Make fun of my tiny guitar. Yeah. I dare you. I can buy and sell you.
Sitting on a pile of money. All right, Yellow Wedge. In 1910, about what percentage of Americans aged 25 or over had college degrees?
In 1910,
how many over 25-year-olds have college
degrees? Multiple choice?
Multiple choice.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
3%, 10%, or 16%?
Hmm.
Colin.
I'll say 3%.
It is 3%. Hmm. Note here says, by March 2007, this figure had risen to 29%.
Hmm.
All right, Purple Wedge, what Simpsonian expression made it to the New Oxford Dictionary of English in 1998?
Huh.
Chris.
Dope.
Yep. Dope. D'OH.
Yes.
Homer's catchword is defined as, quote, used to comment on an action perceived as foolish or stupid, end quote.
Hardcore Simpsons fans, of course,
will
know that famously in the scripts for the show, it's transcribed as annoyed grunt.
Oh, yeah.
So Homer's doe is annoyed grunt.
Interesting. Not spelled out as doe.
Right.
Huh. All right. Green Wedge for science. What does an... Oh, man. Pronounce it. Anemometer measure. What? Anemometer.
Oh.
Anemometer.
Anemometer?
Anemometer.
Anemometer.
Man.
Is that wind speed?
Is wind speed.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Not sea anemones.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. How do you pronounce
How
it again?
How big is this anemone?
Anemometer.
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 How do you spell?
A-N-E-M-O meter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anemometer. All right. Orange Wedge, last question. Which is not... a color of one of the Olympic rings.
Oh, okay. So we should know this.
Actually, this is really easy. Can you name me all five colors of the Olympic rings?
Bludgeoning your bladder gets it red.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Blue,
that is a mnemonic.
Yellow, black, green, red.
Was I here for that? I don't think I remember that.
Bludgeoning your bladder gets it red.
Yeah,
that's a Karen Chu original.
Yeah.
Wow.
It makes sense.
And true.
Yeah, and true.
Yeah. What were the choices that the card listed?
You know, black, blue, red, silver, or yellow.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
There are no gray ones.
There are no gray ones, so there you go. Well, good job, brains. Oh, good job remembering that mnemonic.
Available for free at goodjobbrain.com.
no charge for the first mnemonic.
We give you that one for free.
Yeah, exactly.
We give a bunch for free.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. In fact, all of them. All of the mnemonics. No paywall mnemonics.
No. So today's show, I'm very excited. I'm very excited because it's about the 90s, my favorite decade. Mm. I'm a kid of the 90s. I think you guys
are
too.
Yeah,
I mean, you were
a girl to woman.
Yeah.
right.
I was a tiny kid in the 80s, but I
feel like you guys are more children
You're
of the
more
90s.
Of an 80s
yeah,
kid.
I would identify more as an 80s kid.
But 90s was a strange decade. It was very extreme. Lots of pop culture, lots of different things happening. So today our episode is about 90s trivia and 90s stories and walking down memory lane. To the max!
Extreme! This is how we do it. I will start us off here. I will go first, and appropriately enough for this quiz is called Number One in the 90s.
Oh. Okay.
So this will be all about things that were either number ones or firsts or led their particular category of what have you. Number One in the 90s.
All
so
right.
Here we go.
Buzzing in.
Please get your buzzers ready, and here we go. In 1996, this natural disaster movie was the first feature film released on DVD.
Whoa.
Hmm. Oh, geez.
Karen.
Natural disaster.
Does
Armageddon count?
It was not Armageddon. Okay. I would count it, though, to answer your question, but it was not Armageddon. That was 1998, I believe. Chris.
Oh,
it was David.
Dana.
Yeah. Is it Twister?
It is Twister.
Oh.
Yes.
First movie.
First feature film released on DVD.
Huh.
It also has the perhaps ignominious distinction of being the last film released on HD DVD when HD DVD lost the format wars to Blu-ray.
Yep. Yeah.
Interesting.
This TV show was the highest rated series for the Fox network in the 1990s. And I'll give you a hint, it was not The Simpsons.
Mm.
Karen.
Beverly Hills 90210.
Incorrect.
What?
Chris.
Melrose Place.
Incorrect.
What was the first part of the question?
This was the highest rated series in terms of like Nielsen year-end ratings. Highest rated series for the Fox network in the 1990s. It was the first Fox show to crack the year-end top 20.
Oh.
It's a cult hit. Dana.
X-Files?
It was the X-Files.
Oh, sure.
Yes, yes. Year by year, X-Files was their biggest hit.
Wow.
Okay.
So 90s.
So 90s.
Yeah.
In addition to being good for David Duchovny, the 90s were a great time for what I kind of call the high-volume novelists.
Yeah,
sure. What does that mean?
Well,
they crank out novels at a superhuman speed. Yeah.
Right, right.
They may or may not be
They had ghostwriters.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think some of these names, at least, were doing most of the writing for themselves. Stephen King and John Grisham each had 8 New York Times number one bestsellers in the 90s.
It's like a whole 10 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
But,
see, where you're like, okay.
But this author had them both beat. This author had 12 number one New York Times bestsellers in the 1990s.
Novelist?
Dana.
Kuntz?
Not Kuntz. Good guess.
Novelist?
Yes.
Okay, not like comic book artist.
Right, right.
12 number one 12 New York Times bestsellers.
Not Dean Koontz.
James
Karen.
Patterson.
Not a bad guess as well. Not James Patterson. Chris.
Michael Crichton.
Also not a bad guess.
Danielle Steele.
It was Danielle Steele. Yes.
Ladies love their love books.
They really do, and she could really crank them out.
Right.
Crichton. I forgot. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, those
Grisham
were good.
And Crichton.
Yeah. The other big name, you guys, Tom Clancy also.
Oh, of course.
90s, really
prolific.
Good for him. Yeah. So as impressive as 12 number ones in the decade was, she did not accomplish what this author did, which is 3 New York Times number one bestsellers in the same year, in 1999. Chris.
J.K. Rowling.
Absolutely correct.
90s, that's right.
1999, she had Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, and Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yep.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because it all just kind of hit.
Last year of the 90s.
Yep, just rolling in the money.
Not that she did not write them all
JK.
That year.
Yeah, JK.
She launched the Harry Potter series, got launched from obscurity into stardom that year, and
right.
people bought the older books.
Yep, yeah. yep, and they just sort of, the popularity of one laddered right into the next one.
Yep.
Yep. The 90s, of course, were also very good for James Cameron and Steven Spielberg.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Between them, they directed 4 of the 10 year-end highest-grossing movies of the 1990s. Hmm. Can you guys name all 4? And you can team up if you like.
Okay, what,
James
Titanic.
Cameron and Steven Spielberg?
James Cameron and Steven Spielberg. Let's go around. Okay. Karen.
Titanic.
Titanic, yes, 1997.
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, yes, 1993.
Independence Day?
No.
Any 4 is not.
Steven Spielberg,
Of James Cameron and 2 of Spielberg?
2 each.
Yeah.
Two each.
Is there an alien movie in there somewhere?
Not an alien. There was a sci-fi franchise in there. 1991.
Not Abyss.
1991 was Terminator 2.
Oh, that's right.
Oh,
Judge
wow.
Day.
Yeah, that was the 90s. Right. Yeah, right. What's the last one?
And last one, 1998, war movie.
Oh, Saving Private
Saving
Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. That's right.
Amistad.
I forgot that he did that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. Millions and millions and millions of dollars later. What was special about the 1994 Winter Olympic Games held in Lillehammer, Norway? What did they? What changed maybe in the way they ran the Olympics?
Oh, was that the year when they were not the same year as the Summer Olympics?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Oh. Yep, Davis got it. 1994 was the first year when they started staggering the winter and summer.
They used to be in the same year?
They were always in the same year until 1992. So 1992 with the Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, and the Winter Olympics in Albertville, France, they decided to give the games more time to prepare and, quite frankly, a way to make more money to stagger them. So they got on opposite schedules. So they had another one 2 years later, just the Winter Olympics in 94.
Hmm.
I like the staggering.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So the first one that was not in the same year as the Summer Olympics.
Cool.
This recording artist had the most Billboard number one hit songs of the 1990s with 14 hits. Karen.
Mariah Carey.
You are correct.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mariah Carey. Yeah. More than the next two combined. Janet Jackson had 6. Boys
That's
to Men had 5. Yeah. Mariah Carey, just in terms of Billboard hits, just owned the 90s.
She killed it. Yep.
Yep. According to the Social Security Administration, the number one boy name for babies born from 1990 to 1999 is Michael. I'll give you that one.
Okay.
I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
Michael was the most popular name by a good margin over number two, which was Christopher.
Okay.
So Michael, most popular boy's name. Tell me, what was the most popular name for girls? And I'll give you multiple choice here, unless someone wants to just take a stab right out of the dark. Chris.
Jennifer.
That's what I was going to say.
It is not.
Oh.
So, tell me, was the most popular name for babies born in the U.S. in the 90s Jessica, Ashley, Emily, or Sarah?
I know.
Sarah.
It is not Sarah.
No, really?
Jessica.
It is Jessica.
I knew so many Jessicas and Jennifers. And
Yeah, a lot of Jessicas in the 90s.
Yeah.
All right, last one. Here we go. They're obviously still quite popular today, but the 90s was just boom times for Starbucks coffee. In 1996, Starbucks opened their first location outside North America. In what city? Chris.
Tokyo, Japan.
It is Tokyo, Japan. Yeah,
is it
Tokyo,
is
Japan.
Is it the Shibuya Crossing one? Or
I'm not sure one. Yeah,
probably wasn't that one to start off.
First one in 96. Today there are over 1,000 just in Japan alone.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, more than 23,000 worldwide.
Yeah, it's my understanding that Shibuya Crossing one, which is the one you've seen, the massive, like, crosswalk in Japan where all the people rush across it.
Right,
it's huge.
Right.
Like, there's one there. And, I mean, this is certainly true. They only sell one size of beverage because it's so popular and so heavily trafficked.
Oh, so it's making it more
down.
Efficient.
Yep.
They just keep people moving through.
They're just a tall, I think, or possibly grande. I think it's just tall.
All right. So we are now mentally transported back to the right decade.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, 90s and being a kid in 90s and was kind of the convergence of super marketing and kid stuff and food. Snack food in the 90s was pretty extreme. Yeah. There was a lot of experimentation. There was a lot of marketing force behind
different
it.
Shapes and forms. Yeah.
So I'm going to just list out some of the things I remember. And I keep in mind, I lived in a different country and I still got a lot of these Americanized like 90s stuff. And let's see if we remember some of these things. Do you guys remember Clearly Canadian?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Loganberry.
Oh, yeah. What was, yeah. We had that at my house for
was
sure.
Was that the sparkling water with, like, fruit?
It was
like,
not sparkling water. It was soda.
It was soda, but clear.
Just clear.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's so marketed
but it was sugary?
As, like,
oh,
it
my
was
gosh. So sweet.
Oh, it really did, though. You're right. I mean, like, it's flavored sparkling water.
Yeah. But it's not. It's actually soda. Yeah.
It is really
those
just soda.
Sons of,
with
right,
a
wow.
lot of sugar.
We definitely drank those in my house.
So you're like, oh, it's Canadian. The water must be fresh. And there's fruit flavor. So healthy. No. It was operated by its own beverage company. It wasn't owned by, like, Snapple or Coca-Cola. It was really from a Canadian company.
Oh, okay.
They also released, I don't know if you remember, Orbit.
Oh yeah.
Which those was balls. A drink with suspended balls.
Yeah.
Jelly balls.
It was not good.
In it.
No. Everybody bought like a bottle of Orbitz because we had, it was the
it
thing. You
cool.
had to try it. Yeah. But no, it was just gross. Why would you drink it?
Sadly, Clearly Canadian, you know, didn't do so well after a couple years. But in 2013, now they have a crowdfunded campaign to bring
to
back.
To bring it back.
I like the Loganberry.
You can go online. You can commit to buy a case.
Oh, man.
I love that you have so such funny. Specific memories of the one flavor.
Yeah,
it was the
they want to hit a certain number for production and they'll start producing and they'll ship it to your place. Fruit by the Foot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Super 90s. I remember having Banjo-Kazooie video game codes printed on the paper. Mm-hmm. And so you'd want to eat.
Yeah. Fruit by the Foot. Is this still around?
Still around.
Yeah. Okay,
My sister used to, because the wrappers have the inches on them, and that was how she kind of understood what a foot was. Like, she'd use it and be like, oh,
do you know how
like
long
a foot.
Right.
Usually one roll of Fruit by the Foot is?
3 feet?
3 feet.
Yeah.
3 feet.
Okay. 3 feet.
So really, it's fruit by the yard.
A lot of artificial coloring as a gimmick. Do you guys remember Trix yogurt?
Oh.
It's half of the yogurt is like green and half of the is blue and you
it was yogurt.
It was yogurt.
It was colored.
It's a cup of yogurt.
Oh, okay. It wasn't
yogurt.
Like Trix cereal with yogurt flavored bits
no.
in there.
No. It was actually a cup of
that
yogurt.
That ketchup that was purple or green or blue.
Yes. Multicolored
crazy
ketchup.
Flavored ketchup or colored ketchup,
I read this and I've never seen this before. Maybe you guys heard of it. Pop Quiz Popcorn. Quiz spelled Q-W-I-Z.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's by Pop Secret, which is one of the microwavable popcorn companies. It's colored popcorn in your microwave. You get like green popcorn, and then there's one of the packets is a mystery color.
I
don't know the color until you put it in the microwave.
Right. That's cool.
Never seen it, but I saw the commercials. Very, very 90s. Dunkaroos, I remember.
Oh, were those the little chocolate, the graham crackers
cookies?
That you dip in the chocolate?
With frosting.
Oh, man.
It was just a vehicle for frosting.
They still have those.
It was like where they'd sell you like the crackers that you dip in peanut butter, but it was like they sell you a cookie that you dip in frosting.
Yeah. And it's extreme because there's like a skateboarding kangaroo as the
with
mascot.
A backwards baseball hat and sunglasses.
Yeah.
That's how you know he's cool.
And this I've never seen, and I wish I was here in America to taste it and to put it in my body. Hostess Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pies.
Oh, I'm sorry you missed it.
Filled with
turtle
green ooze,
vanilla pudding power.
Oh,
it is.
What does that have to do with Ninja Turtles?
So it's a pie. The outer crust has a green frosting on it, so it's turtley.
Okay.
And inside is vanilla pudding.
Like their guts or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, where's this metaphor going? Am I eating the turtles or is this...
I do want to say, growing up in the 90s, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was such a big part of Karen's life. Like, I watched all the cartoons. I would draw Ninja Turtles on my free time.
Which one were you?
I was a Mikey. I was definitely
everybody
Mikey.
Was.
Everyone wants to be Mikey.
What? I was Donatello.
Nerdy one?
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
but did you like Donatello growing up?
But probably I was more like Raphael. You know what I mean?
I
probably
see
thought
that.
Of myself.
You're very
Raphael.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You're cool but rude.
Right, yeah.
I'm a party dude. growing up, I did not know Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was a comic before the show. Yeah. It was a very dark comic.
Eastman and Laird.
Eastman and Laird. Really gritty.
Black and white.
Basically, what happened was a licensing agent approached them and was like, hey, have you guys thought about making these figures into toys? And then that's when the giant market machine kind of swooped in and was like, okay, we're going to make lines of toys and then we're going to have this company make it into a TV cartoon. And it just became so separate from the original comic. It just became like He-Man and all of the Saturday cartoons. Right. It became a marketing machine to sell toys to kids and other licensing deals, including so many Ninja Turtle food tie-ins.
Sure.
Here is a list of a curated list. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. I'm just picking up the weird ones.
Abridged.
Okay. Yeah. There's something called TMNT Cracks.
What? For kids.
For kids. Yeah. Goldfish crackers shaped like Ninja Turtle characters.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And Shredder's one of the shapes, too.
Sure.
Because kids call them cracks.
Yeah.
Call them crackers.
Crackers. Yeah, like, cracker is like...
I'm a cracks head.
Yeah. I love my cracks.
You as a little kid guy. Hey, Dad, guess what? I'm a cracks head.
We are taking these back to the
I'm
store right
to
now.
Cracks.
Of course, it came in pizza flavor and cheese flavor.
Naturally.
Sure.
There's also pizza crunchabungas.
Perfect.
What's going on?
Pizza flavored corn snacks in the shape of pizzas.
What? Wow.
Just in case that the kids don't get it.
Yeah, that is an M.C. Escher
pizza flavored
calculation.
Corn snacks.
Yeah.
There are cookies. Chef Boyardee had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pasta with the little turtle heads. There was cereal. That came with a pouch of green ooze syrup topping for your sugary cereal.
Oh my god.
The green ooze really was a big help, right? I mean, the fact that they got coated in ooze to become the mutant Ninja Turtles, like, then they could just incorporate that into every food.
Yeah.
But the 1990s were the low-fat era. It was the era of, just as long as you're not consuming any fat, you're okay. Yeah. So everybody was like, all right, I'll just eat all the sugar.
Twizzler is low in fat.
Right.
You're like, well,
it was never the fat of the cookies that was the problem.
That was the problem. Right. There you go. Trip down memory lane of some snacks we probably ate as kids.
I would like to talk about another fad of the 1990s that I did not in any significant way participate in, but that touched all of our lives, and that is, of course, the slap bracelet.
Oh, literally touch all of our
lives.
Yes,
it slapped all of us on the wrist.
Yeah.
Did you not play with them?
I probably had a slap bracelet, but I mean, I never... Did you guys, like, get into it?
I was a little too old. I was a little too old for that, yeah.
Yeah, because that was very much a... came out in the 90s.
I spent many an afternoon just, like, slapping it on and off, like, while I watched TV. Yep. I was like, yeah, this was my pre-iPhone game kind of activity to do while I watched TV.
Well, it was the thrilling combination of fashion and toy. So slap bracelets are very, very simple. You have a curved ribbon of steel, and you have a cloth covering. And basically, just in case you're like with the one person listening to the show who's never encountered it before, it's sort of a straight piece of steel, but then when you bend it, it immediately snaps into a coil. And so if you slap it on the top of your wrist, it immediately kind of goes from being straight to wrapping around your wrist like a bracelet. They were invented by a shop teacher, a high school shop class, teacher. The guy's name was Stuart Anders. And they were actually invented them in 1983.
Oh.
He never productized it until the 90s. And it was picked up as a product by Main Street Toy. And this was a company that was based in Simsbury, Connecticut.
Oh.
And it was founded by former executives of, what do you think?
Connecticut.
Coleco.
Founded by former Coleco executives. Now, these guys, having been burned by the boom and bust of Cabbage Patch Kids, had learned a lot of lessons about don't tie up too much of your money in overhead. Like, don't have super expensive products that as soon as people decide they don't want to buy Cabbage Patch Kids anymore, you go out of business.
Got it.
So Main Street Toy was really looking to be like a lean, mean organization with those lessons they had learned from Coleco, and they wanted to find inexpensive toys that they could make, cheaply, that kind of limited their risk, limited their exposure, but, could potentially be a big hit.
And this is like the opposite end of Cabbage Patch Kids.
Exactly. Yep. Right. And so they found Stuart Anders' invention because he had basically tried to shop it around to people.
So I seem to remember when I was a kid, my dad had a yardstick.
Yeah.
That was a 3 foot long, essentially that steel ribbon thing, and my sister and I would just play with it like a toy. But it was very clearly, like, I remember when slap bracelets came out. I'm like, oh, that's the same. It's the same phenomenon. This is what he invented.
Yeah, because in fact, it is. If you think about it, the same thing that's in your roll of measuring tape, for example, right? It's a curved, ribbon of steel. There's actually DIY videos how to make a slap bracelet with measuring tape. You just cut it off, and you do have to work it a little bit. Yeah,
the natural state is curled. Coiled.
What's actually fascinating about this is it is what is known as a bistable structure. Okay. Slap bracelets are a commonly used example of a bistable structure, which means that it is stable in two states. Your light switch is probably a bistable mechanism. It wants to be either up or down. It doesn't like to be half up, half down, it will snap back into that state. And that is what is so fun about the snap bracelet, because it goes from rigid to immediately coiling. It wants to be in one of those two states, and those are the states in which it is stable. It is a ballpoint pen is also a bistable mechanism. It wants to be either clicked or unclicked, and it does not like being in between those two states, but it will go to one of them. So, Main Street Toy Company picks up the slap bracelet, and they showed it at the Toy Fair in 1990, and they had totally planned on releasing it. But after Toy Fair, they realized that the steel they were using was thin enough that it actually could cause injury, because the edge of it could cut somebody, especially if they were to take off the cloth covering. So they delayed the launch of the actual brand name. The original was the Slap Wrap. Slap Wrap. That was the official original brand name. They delayed the launch. This let knockoff makers very quickly and cheaply make knockoffs, and they actually got those to market first. And when you started hearing about, there were like news stories about like kids getting cut on these, and they insisted, they were like, they are getting cut on knockoffs of our product. Our product actually is safe, and in fact it's the only one that's passing the safety test, because we are using thicker, higher grade steel that will not cut you. In 1990 alone, when they launched, they sold millions of these. And of course, already by the end of 1990, you have a report in the New York Times of slap wraps, slap bracelets being banned from schools.
They're distracting.
They're distracting. Yeah. They're distracting. They're not just fashion. They're toys, and people are sitting there playing with them. Yeah. What's really interesting about the slap bracelet measuring tape connection is that a lot of the knockoff slap bracelet manufacturers also realized this. They started making a lot of their knockoff slap bracelets out of coils of actual measuring tape.
Wow.
Like, either whether they were reusing them or unsold measuring tape, they were cutting it up into slap bracelets.
So if you took the cloth off and looked underneath,
if you buy a crappy knockoff slap bracelet and take, if you just start taking the covers off of slap bracelets, you'll probably start uncovering some reused measuring tape. Yep, that's underneath there, because it is the same thing. In fact, in the year 2011, something very funny happened with slap bracelets. Slap bracelets came back into the news briefly. A Florida elementary school gave out slap bracelets to some of its kids as a reward for, participating in a fundraising drive. And it was all well and good. They had their slap bracelets until one of the children took off the cloth covering to find that inside the bracelet had, in fact, used recycled measuring tape. Except that the Chinese company that had made these had actually reused sexy novelty measuring tape, and that every few inches along the measuring tape, a sexy lady, sexy naked photograph of a lady had
Perfect.
Been strategically placed.
And every cover was off by the end of the day.
The school recalled them of the 100-something they distributed. They got 4 back. And after the story hit the news, Stuart Anders, inventor of the slap bracelet, sent all of the kids.
Oh.
actual official slap rap brand.
Safe.
Yeah, safe, and no naked ladies underneath
promptly
the coverings.
Went in the garbage, yeah. Because that's not the point.
That's, yep. Yeah.
And I will leave you with this observation. You know, like many fashion trends of the 1990s, the slap bracelet may be poised after a fashion to be making a comeback at some point, because of course the patents that have been leaked out for what people believe may in fact be Apple's iWatch use a slap bracelet as the band.
Oh, that's cool.
So we may all be slapping our iWatches onto our wrists.
So just last week, yeah, at our pub quiz, you remember, Karen, on our way out, there had been an event there, and one of the sponsors had left slap beer cozies, basically. So it was like neoprene two strips embedded in it, flat, and you're like supposed to slap it around your beer. Well, like, Karen and I were like, wait, so you just smack it on the beer? Mm-hmm. And then the bartender lady was like, yeah, I guess. She's like, or you could put it on your wrist. But it was an interesting
one. Now it's like a slap cuff or something.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I did it. I was like, okay, well, it's neoprene.
Slap armor.
It's waterproof.
Yeah. Right,
Wonder
yeah.
Woman.
So we laughed, and then we just left it there and went on our way.
So did the people who left it there, too.
Yeah.
Like, wow, what's this? Oh, cool, slap bracelet.
Yeah, later.
It's so funny when you were signaling, like, what it was, then I was like, a bra? Like, what is it? Like,
slap on bra.
Slap on bra. You've only got 3 seconds to get ready in the morning. Yeah.
Ow. All right, we're going to take a quick ad break. A word from our sponsor.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles. Smart trivia. Good job, brain.
All right, so I'm going to talk about a symbol that appeared in the 90s and now is everywhere. It really started in the 90s. It's the red ribbon, the AIDS ribbon.
Oh,
that happened.
Yeah. Right.
That was super big.
In 1991, the red ribbon was created by the Visual AIDS Artist Caucus. They were a group of artists in New York and AIDS activists, and they wanted to create a symbol to show solidarity with AIDS research and AIDS awareness. Jeremy Irons was the one who wore it to the Tonys. It became big. That was 1991. By 1992, the New York Times was calling it the year of the ribbon. Huh. Everybody was putting ribbons on everything. Everybody was making ribbons to raise awareness for whatever their cause is.
Oh, right, but the red one for AIDS was the first symbol, was the first ribbon.
And before that, there was the yellow ribbon that you tie on a tree to... You know, symbolize support for military abroad or people.
Is that what the song is from? Tie a yellow ribbon.
Yeah, right. But the little ribbon, the little fold of ribbon that you wear on your on your shirt, that was it started with the red one for AIDS.
The visual shorthand of it.
Okay.
Yes. So I have a very small quiz for you guys. Okay. I will describe the causes, or some of the causes.
Oh, okay.
And you tell me...
Pink with purple polka dots is for gallstones, I think.
It might be. Some of these are very on the nose. You're like, I guess that is why it's that color.
Okay, all right.
Wow, so. I didn't know there were so many to necessitate a quiz.
Oh, there's tons. And I'm going to pick, I'll give you some hints. Okay. So these are very like straightforward colors. I'm not doing like zebras or clouds or...
Are there zebras and clouds?
Oh, yeah. The ribbons get very intricate. So I was like, you're never going to know that
is
it's puzzle pieces.
Is all of their shape the same? The loop?
Yeah, that's a... Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then the ribbon on it has different things printed on it. Yes. Different okay. colors, stripes, whatever, you know. So these are all solid colors. All they're right. all colors you know. All
right.
But you may not know that they're the causes that are associated with that color. Okay. This is the color for breast cancer awareness. Everybody.
Pink.
Pink, yes.
Oh, pink.
What's the color for lung cancer awareness?
Whoa.
Oh.
Yellow?
No.
Brown.
Black?
No.
Blue?
No, it's clear for clear air or
oh,
clear white.
That's not
oh,
that's not a very good white. Yeah. symbol.
Clear isn't a color.
Yeah, yeah right.
Sorry, you guys. That's I tried okay. to keep... There were way more intricate ones than that. I thought in comparison, that was a pretty easy
okay.
one.
No, that's good to
know. I'm wearing one right now.
No, you're not.
So among other causes, this one is for Lyme diseases, legalizing marijuana, pedestrian safety, and mental health awareness. Colin.
It must be green.
It's green.
Wait, what were the other ones? Lyme disease.
Okay. Lyme disease.
Yeah. Right, green. Because limes are green.
Sure,
yeah.
sure. Yeah. Legalizing marijuana.
Okay.
Yes.
Pedestrian safety?
Yeah, you know, green light.
Means go.
Yeah.
Sure. And mental health awareness.
Because okay.
For green. Peace? I don't
know. Yeah. yeah.
sure. How about bullying, child abuse awareness, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, freedom of speech?
Oh.
I think I remember bullying.
Bullying, freedom of speech, EFF, and what else?
And child abuse awareness.
White.
No.
Blue. Yeah,
blue.
I think bully was blue.
Hmm.
Bully blue.
Genetic disorder awareness.
Oh, man.
This is so weird.
It is really weird, but I could imagine this coming up on a quiz where you have to, like, know.
Genetic disorder awareness.
This one is kind of on the nose, the color that they...
Oh, gold?
It's jeans. Blue
denim?
Jeans. Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Well, like denim colored? Or
yeah, denim colored.
So wow. It's a denim ribbon.
Jeans.
Wow.
Yeah.
Colin, so you're rolling your eyes.
So specific.
Yeah. It's not even a color more. It's like
yeah,
a
it's
pattern.
A fabric and
it's a
yeah.
Blue
yeah.
jeans.
Yeah.
How about lupus, orca whale awareness and protection, pagan pride, March of Dimes awareness, migraine awareness. There's like a whole laundry list more. What color represents all those things? What do you think, Karen?
I think it's yellow.
No.
Oh, I thought lupus was it.
Silver.
Nope, it's purple.
Mm.
Wait, lupus?
March Orcas. Of Dimes awareness?
Orca, yeah. killer yeah. whale.
Orca?
Also migraine
pagan
awareness.
Pride.
Pagan pride, purple.
Purple had the longest list.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, just two more, and they're very basic colors. Bone cancer, Amber Alert, Armed Forces Return. Colin.
White.
No.
Oh.
Yellow.
Yes.
Oh.
Armed Forces Return.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Amber Alert.
Also Amber Alert, yeah, but not Amber.
Okay, last one.
I would assume Amber Alert is amber.
Close enough.
Yeah,
close
okay.
enough.
Okay.
Close enough.
9/11, Virginia Tech, and sleep apnea.
Black.
Yes. Good job.
Man.
I'm not laughing at any of those things.
No,
I'm just laughing
no,
at how...
It's the random. Like, it's, yeah.
It is so random.
You have so many colors, and you have so many causes.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to be overloaded on any
yeah,
color.
They're all overloaded. Even the very, like, weird colors have more than one thing on them.
Wait, I want to look at this list. I want to know what the zebra stripe is. Wow, this is a giant list.
I know everybody wants a ribbon.
So there's rare disease awareness for zebra print.
I like that rare diseases is zebra
yeah.
print. That's very clever.
common diseases is horse color.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blue paisley ribbon for thyroid disease awareness.
People still do it, but it was really big in the 90s,
it
the
was.
Ribbons.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
My goodness, what a world. I think in the new generation, it's those bracelets, those rubber bracelets,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Lance Armstrong
oh,
had the yellow
sure.
bracelet.
Yeah,
yeah.
Were those part of the aughts, the 2000s?
Yeah, that's kind of, that was the 2000s.
So not relevant.
Chris, you're so mean. What a troll.
Yeah. I'm like Raphael.
So you're saying, yeah, you are.
You're so cool.
You are such
rude.
A Raphael.
Give me a break.
Yeah, give me a break.
Lance, Leonardo leads Donatello does machine. That's a fact.
Raphael is cool, but
give me a break.
The mansion is a party.
I remember we played the video game. Like, we would play the video game a lot.
Game Boy and
arcades.
Stand up.
And it was a 4-person side scroller, and we would fight over like who got to. And it was so perfect for that type of game.
Which one were you?
Who was nunchucks? I would always
Michelangelo.
I would always want to play.
Donatello because it gives you a ranged weapon. He had a bow staff, so it was good. It was like. Kill it.
It was. Yeah. It was a good team. It was like team based. Yeah. So I'm sure you guys remember as we approached the end of 1999, there was one question, one issue everybody was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
All over the news. The Y2K. Oh, Y2K bug. So much real ink, so much virtual ink spilled writing about the Y2K bug.
People were really worried. I was worried. They're like, what if...
That, like, the world was going to shut down.
Yeah.
Right. Every computer on Earth was going to just stop functioning.
Yeah, right.
Credit card bills were going to get erased and the national debt was going to get wiped out.
Airplanes are going to fall from the sky.
Yep.
I mean, just explosions. I mean, some of the doomsday scenarios were so dire.
Yeah. Right.
Well, before we go any further, let me ask you guys just to verify that we're all on the same page.
Okay.
What we are talking about when I say the Y2K bug. First, what does it stand for? What is Y2K?
Oh.
Year 2000.
The year 2000.
Yeah, year 2000.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
And then a little more in depth, in a nutshell, any of you guys want to just briefly summarize it?
Some of the computer systems were using 2 digits to represent the year. So when it rolled back around, when it was 00 again, it's like, is this 1900 or is this 2000?
It was going to think it was the year 1900.
Yeah, right. We went back
and it was going to like repeal, you know, the 21st Amendment, basically.
Yeah. Or you have to pay your grandparents' bills now or something.
Right, like, right, whatever. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right, right. Yeah. Or they're going to mark you as 120 years old.
So it wasn't really a bug.
It was, you know,
poor planning.
Programming bug.
Poor planning.
I mean, in fairness, like a lot of the computer programmers at the time who made some of these trade-offs basically to save space and code they said, we never thought that this code would still be running, that these systems would still, by the time it got around, we figured we'd patch it up later.
We thought we'd be living in cities on the moon in the year 2000.
Right.
Not running our old computer code that we wrote like in the 60s and that it would just be like, you know, be layering patch after patch after patch on it.
Right, right. I mean, it's funny to look back at it now. So to get ready for this, I went back and I read a whole lot of news articles and news coverage in the last year or two in the run-up before 2000 switched over. And even by that time, I think most newspapers and news organizations were kind of reporting on it sort of tongue-in-cheek, kind of a lighthearted approach. Like, they didn't really think anything seriously bad was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was true. Corporations and governments had to spend a lot of money and a lot of time patching code, writing updates, monitoring systems. President Bill Clinton, he created the Council on the Year 2000. He had a Year 2000 czar, you know.
Sure.
The transportation department, FEMA, they were all, you know, as a government, you can't afford to take it lightly because God forbid something bad did happen. You don't want to be the one who didn't fix it.
Yeah.
There were 400 federal government technicians and computer specialists tasked just with making sure everything transitioned smoothly as we moved from 1999 into 2000. I didn't know this until reading some of the old coverage. The U.S. and Russia coordinated a joint nuclear monitoring task force.
Sure.
Okay.
So they got reps from both countries together in a special bunker in Colorado. So as the year switched over, they could together monitor both countries' systems just to make sure, you know, no misunderstandings, no alarm goes off and somebody thinks an attack is imminent.
Better safe than sorry.
Especially than sorry.
I mean, it's one thing with the post office, but it's another thing with nuclear weapons.
Right. I mean, and in the end, of course, no planes fell from the sky. Banks didn't lose all their money. There were no nuclear missiles launched. There were some issues.
Yeah.
There were a few things. So, I mean, but for the most part, they were fairly benign, fairly minor.
Right, but I mean, nothing bad happened because people anticipated the problem coming up and retrofitted all of their systems to make sure that nothing bad happened.
Okay,
right.
Got it.
There were a few incidents, you know, with hospital records getting messed up. On the whole, it was about as serious as a railway station showing the wrong departure date, you know. For the most part, nothing catastrophic happened.
Who coined the term Y2K, do you know?
It was some of the computer specialists, basically, who first sort of talk about, in the 90s, yeah. you know, leading up to this, like, hey, this is something we're going to have to address here wow. pretty soon.
Very yep. elite hackers of them, right? Wasn't Office Space the plot of it? They were patching up bank software for Y2K.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. At Inatech, that was what they were spending. Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Are you looking for a podcast that your whole family can enjoy that asks the deep philosophical questions like, do trees fart?
If you are, then you'll love Tumble, a science podcast for kids. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Join us as we explore stories of science discovery, from butts to animals, dinosaurs, astronomy, and everything in between.
You'll love these stories, and you'll learn something new.
Find and follow Tumble Science Podcast for Kids wherever you get your podcasts, or at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
All right, I have one last 90s, extreme 90s segment for you guys. And, of course, what's 90s without pop music? Mm. 90s was really kind of the height of pop, and I have a music quiz for you. It's all about pop boy bands the 90s. Okay. And I have to preface this. It's not just a random, you know, assortment of boy bands I pulled out. Like, the thing is, like, people have to understand – the success of New Kids on the Block in the late 80s sparked the whole boy band pop movement of the 90s.
Sure.
Okay. And so all of these bands in the quiz are related to that. Not even resurgence, but because of New Kids on the Block. This is how the format's going to go. I feel like Dana has an upper edge on this quiz, being a girl growing up in the 90s and also likes pop. So for her, she has a notepad, and she's going to write down what she thinks the artist is from the music clips I'll be playing.
Okay. Okay.
And Chris and Colin will work together,
okay.
team up, and try to see if you can right. get it. One big hint is, as long as you know what the lead singer of all these boy bands sound like, you probably can guess the boy band.
Wow, that's great.
But like Justin Timberlake. You know,
sure. If I knew what Justin Timberlake sounded like, I would be able to guess that it was.
All right, here we go. We got two brains here.
What was Justin Timberlake in?
He was
I have a feeling you guys are going to beat me.
He was in Sync.
Yeah.
Nicholas Shea was 98 Degrees.
Oh, don't give us
his
answer.
She's helping us.
Whatever, it's okay.
Yeah, because we don't know what he sounds like.
He doesn't know what that sounds.
All right. Here we go. First one.
Okay. This is the song I'm Not Picky by the Backstreet Boys.
This is As Long As You Love Me. I think this is NSYNC.
No, this is the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, it is the Backstreet Boys?
I believe. No, okay. Yeah, this one I'm
okay,
pretty
you seem
sure.
very confident.
Yes.
Okay. All right, I will defer to Chris on this one.
Okay.
All right, you guys, boys say Backstreet Boys.
Yes.
Dana, reveal your answer. Backstreet Boys.
All right.
Okay. Correct. Yeah, yeah. All right. Next one.
A girl from Abercrombie and Fitch. New Kids on the Block had a bunch of hits. Chinese food makes me sick, and I think it's right when girls stop by for the summer. For the summer, I like girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch. I'd take her if I had one wish. She's been gone since that summer. Since that summer. Cherry pants, cold crush, rock stud boogie. Used to hate school, so
if you don't know it, you don't know it.
They sing New Kids on the Block? I mean, I think
they were just name checking them at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
They also talked about how Chinese food makes them sick. Yeah, I mean.
Okay.
I don't know.
Just throw a.
I know, I want you to guess something because I really.
It's in a punch bowl in your head.
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's in the punch bowl. Yep.
It's somewhere in there.
I mean, I don't think it's NSYNC. I've never heard it. Is it
like O-Town?
O-Town. Is it O-Town?
Incorrect. Dana? LFO.
The light funky ones.
Wow.
Yeah,
hey.
I was
that was not in my punch bowl.
Is this in your punch bowl? No, I didn't think it was.
That was not in the punch bowl.
It's very specific.
So this is actually very related to New Kids on the Block. I mean, obviously, they're more, they do some kind of rapping.
Are they related to the Funky Bunch?
Mm-hmm. No, they just, so they did a cover of New Kids on the Block, Step by Step, and that kind of gained some attention, and they actually worked with Danny Wood from New Kids on the Block in the kind of behind the scenes production process.
There you go.
All right. Next one. I'll tell you. Yes, I'll tell you. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sunshine after the rain. You're the cure against my fear and my pain. Because I'm losing my mind.
I'm leaning toward 98 degrees on this one.
I feel like we should just keep guessing O-Town over and over and over again. So eventually. One point, yeah. But you want to say 98 degrees?
Yeah, I just for some reason.
Okay, all right.
Getting a Nick Lachey vibe.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dana, answer up?
98 degrees.
Yeah.
Wow.
98.
Oh, hey.
That is what Nick Lachey sounds like.
Okay.
Pretty very, bad.
Yeah.
No. Sorry, Nick Lachey.
I like Nick Lachey.
Oh, God.
Whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure he's crying all the way to the bank.
So in this quiz, I haven't put any, you know, there's All For One, which is kind of a boy band, but there were two camps in the 90s. You had boy bands, pop boy bands, and you had what Boys to Men kind of sparked were all these harmonizing R&B groups.
Right.
And to me, they're very different camps, right? Boy bands are very designed, whereas the more R&B groups are more, you know, kind of like a cappella group. You have a bass, it's based on voice need. And the funny thing is, you know, when I say they're more designed is all the boy bands, you can name the lead singer of all of them. Whereas for a lot of these R&B bands, there's no that's one star. You know, there's
that's
like
true.
A, you know, I can't even name anybody from All For One. And for 98 Degrees, they kind of also started this because they're a pair of brothers. They're the Lachey brothers and two other dudes. And
I didn't know that.
So that kind of gave them a family edge.
What's the other Lachey brother doing these days?
Drew Lachey. He won Dancing with the Stars.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. This one is a little bit more international.
Well, the fact you said international.
They're British.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
A British.
And the creation of this band is solely because, you know, the manager or like the record head saw the success of New Kids on the Block in America and was we gotta jump on this.
Was there a band called, is it two words?
Yes, two words.
Is it Take That?
Yes!
Yeah!
Wow!
Good night, everybody.
Wow!
I'm done.
Wow!
I put something else, and then you said that, and I was like, "That's the name of the band." I knew what I put was not the right one. Like there are two of them. I knew. Yeah.
Main singer is Gary Barlow, who wrote most of the songs. Actually, he was a talented songwriter. They kind of build a band around him. Robbie Williams, most notably.
Okay,
came from Take That.
Was Ronan Keating in that one as well? Was he in the other one?
He was in Boyzone. All right, next one.
Is this one going to be NSYNC, do you think?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah,
all right.
I think so.
Let's go for it.
Dana, answer up.
NSYNC.
NSYNC, it is. Right. And I was tricky. I actually did not pick a clip with Justin Timberlake singing.
Oh. Yeah.
Who is JC Chazé?
Yeah.
Who's the other lead singer? The brunette lead singer. They always have a blonde one and a brunette one.
Yeah. There's the brooding one, the cute one.
The older
one.
It's
like a platter.
Yeah.
The one with glasses.
Yeah.
All right, last one, last boy band. They're all blending together now.
Yeah. Very much so.
Here's one more.
I've had the rest of you, now I want the best of you. It's time to show and tell. Cause I want it all, or nothing at all. There's nowhere left to fall when you reach the bottom. It's now or never.
Wow.
All right. I mean, I'm pretty much like down to like, I can only think of two more. Like, I can think of like O-Town or Menudo.
I don't think it's Menudo. I think we keep saying O-Town, so we should probably just.
You don't think she would have doubled up, right?
No doubling.
Okay, that was.
No.
That's what
I was okay. Okay. Those are literally the only two that I can
Let's
think
go
of.
With, I would not go with Menudo.
Okay.
For many reasons.
So, O-Town.
Sure.
Also, I think Menudo started in the 80s.
They
too,
really did. Yeah.
I guess that's true. You're right. Yeah.
Okay, so you guys say O-Town. What did Dana say?
I said O-Town.
It is O-Town!
Oh!
Significance of O-Town is, so in the whole boy band craze, O-Town was the first or notable reality show.
I remember that they put them together on a reality show, and I was like, oh, okay, well, they're not going to become popular because this is clearly, like, they're up front just stating, like, we are manipulating you, and we, you know, it's like we're putting them together as this sort of marketed thing.
They actually are reuniting summer for a new album.
I've been wondering where they're
just
kidding.
Yeah. The reuniting was easy because none of them ever left Orlando.
Aren't they named O-Town for Orlando?
Yeah, for Orlando.
Orlando Town, as they call it.
Which is like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. They all started in Orlando.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's like the hotbed of boy band culture.
Lou Pearlman or whatever.
A lot of the NSYNC members and Backstreet Boy members, they're in kind of performing as kids in the parks or in the Mickey Mouse
Club. There was that guy. There was like the Svengali manager type dude who is organizing them.
Yeah, they're all...
Who just kind of like handpicked them and assembled them.
And Orlando was the hot town.
Wow. Got it.
Wow.
So there you go. Some of the major boy bands...
Well, I think Chris and I acquitted ourselves well.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that's good or bad. Yeah.
And that is our Totally Tubular 90s show. Thank you for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening. You can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Give me a break.
Iceman, you know I'm not playing. Devastate the show while the turtles are saying. Ninja, rap. Ninja rap, ninja, ninja rap. Go, 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 ninja, go, ninja, go, go, ninja, go, ninja, go.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.